The Dave Damaschek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Damaschek.
Hi and hello, football fans. Welcome to the Dave Damaschek Football Program presented by Old Navy BIFD Built-In Flex Denim. It's a big deal. You know who else is a big deal? The man seated to my immediate left. It's the longtime Jacksonville Jaguar, the Oakland Raider for 1 year, but in his heart it extends much further back into his history than that. And, of course, a UCLA Bruin during a dark time for Southern California college football. It's Maurice Jones-Drew, everybody. But wait, I forgot to say, he's also the voice of your Los Angeles Rams who are going to the Super Bowl.
I was going to be like, you talked about the Jags are atop the AFC. 16-0 is actually, you got to go 2-0 first to go 16-0. So we'll see how it goes. But then the Rams.
That was your Super Bowl pick. But let's not jive, Maurice. You made that out of self-interest because you wanted it to be true.
I do want it to be true. But two, it backs up, with them winning the way they're winning, it backs up my claim. I knew the Rams were going to be really good, and I knew Jacksonville's defense was going to be phenomenal. What I didn't know is that Blake Bortles was going to throw touchdowns like that.
You should have talked to your old pal Dave, because Dave told you Blake Bortles was going to be sneaky decent.
No, I didn't say he wasn't. I knew he was going to be good, but to throw the ball the way he threw and then make the decisions the way he made against the Patriots, if he plays like that, which I don't think they're going to allow him to when Fournette gets back, they're going to try to close games out, but to know he can do that now adds a different weapon to that offense. So it's going to be crazy.
By the way, we have Willie McGinnis, whose Patriots lost to your Jaguars on Sunday. Coming up in a little bit, he has some great stuff. I know this because I've already spoken to him about it. He has great stuff on Josh Gordon, and he evaluates the Pittsburgh Steelers. And
he dips his little carrot in your ranch?
I know. Well, listen, what? Maurice Jones-Drew, that was a way. Where'd you come up with that one? Sounds like something somebody from Mississippi would say. Hey, now, a gentleman doesn't dip his carrot into another man's ranch.
What they say down there is he farms his own land, is what they would say down there. That's carrot and ranch.
All right. Either way, McGinnis weighed in on it, and it's really good stuff, and so stick around for that. But I also want to get your thoughts on it. And, of course, I blame your Jaguars for one of the things that Willie and I were talking about, Josh Gordon. Your Jags don't house the Pats on Sunday. The Patriots aren't as desperate to go out and get this guy.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think this league comes back to being very simple. You need players to win. Right, you need talented guys. Now, some guys come with baggage, some don't. But when you have talent on your roster, you don't want to get rid of that. And obviously the Patriots they've been looking. I want to say there was a report out that said they've had 28 transactions at wide receiver since the draft, or since the new year. So, I mean, they're trying to figure out what's going on, and they need help with that receiving core. And Bill knows that, and he knows that he needs players. But then you look at teams like the Buffalo Bills, who traded away everyone. I mean, Reggie Ragland, all these guys. I mean, they've traded away talent, and then they haven't replaced it yet, right? So it just shows that this league is about players. Yeah, coaches do a great job of getting you prepared, but you have to have players out there with the abilities to go out there and make plays.
Boy, the Bills, as a side note, are not just a bad team. They are lining up to be in the Super Bowl era like a top five bad team.
Well, I'll say this much. Poor Shady for sure, but when a player retires at halftime, that speaks more to your culture of your team than it does anything else.
What do you think of that? Have you ever heard of anything even close to that?
Listen, I've always told people my biggest thing, and people are like, oh, you're lying, you would never do this. Look, I'd rather, if you don't feel like you can play, do not come out of this locker room, because it's a very dangerous game, and you need to have everyone on the field. Once those 10 toes cross those lines, you all have to be ready to go. So I appreciate the fact that he's like, look, I can't do this anymore, and I don't want to go out there and get anyone hurt.
Minutes worth of game. Well, you know what?
I can appreciate that, but
getting hungry, it's late in the afternoon.
The other part is, it's like Anquan Boldin did this last year. We don't talk about that. He was in Buffalo for like a week or like a couple of days and was like, you know what? I'm okay. I'm going to go ahead and retire. So this isn't new. I mean, granted, it's new that he did it at halftime, but there's already a player. There's always something where a player went up there and something's going on up in that Buffalo area for him to not, you know, for him then to retire.
Yeah, that is weird. But for the record, though, you shouldn't cast aspersions, you know, glass houses and all that. You did, after all, retire during the draft. Your draft, remember? You told us before that you told your agent when Lendell White got drafted.
Oh, yeah, no question.
I'm done with football. I'm done.
Yeah, I was ready to go to McDonald's and start working, start a career there, own a couple, like, you know, after a couple years. But, you know, I was talked off the cliff.
And you came out of retirement like Brett Favre.
Yeah, you got to do that sometimes.
Yeah, Brett Favre gets too much credit for that. That was actually Maurice's move first, wasn't it?
I think there's a lot of players that retire and then bounce back in those situations.
All right, enough about the Bills. I don't want to talk about that anymore. Let's talk about the good stuff. And your Jags, for real, Maurice, I mean, you talk about Bortles. The thing to me that comes across on a human level watching him is he seems kind of fearless against the Patriots, and it's the same thing that Joe Flacco weirdly possesses against the Patriots. I would be, even if I were made it to the NFL, I'd still look across the sideline and be like, well, that's Belichick. He's going to do something to trip me up.
The thing for Blake is they've simplified the offense so much for him, right? Think about it, that he's been with his offensive coordinator for 4 years.
That was the knock on him, was that he was not 3 years in grasping the NFL playbook.
But you don't need this big playbook. Sometimes you only need to run 25 plays and just run them over and over and over again and get reps at them. I think that's they've done that. And then, two, in training camp, Jalen Ramsey, we went out there for inside training camp, and I interviewed Jalen Ramsey, and he said Blake last year wouldn't throw the ball at us. He wouldn't try us in practice. Hmm. And now he does it. And so he was like, he has confidence in his receivers and then his playmakers that he's going to, you know, be able to make plays. And so they – you know, you have to go through some dark stuff to come out on top. And I think that's what Blake Bortles understands. Like, now, okay, I'm not going against Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye in this defense every Sunday, only in practice. So I need to try some things in practice so that come the game time, we'll see if it works. And, I mean, he completed I don't know how many go balls against the Patriots. It was amazing to see that. And the receivers are out there making plays for him.
Yeah, they definitely are. Side note quickly, and it's a curmudgeonly one, the Keelan Cole catch was great, but you can only make that in the 21st century because of those gloves, right? You've never seen anything like the Odell catch and what's followed it is because those guys have gloves.
Well,
I want to get a pair of those gloves.
They have big hands, too. You got to remember, you have to have big hands.
Big hand. What, was the NFL players from 1980 didn't have big hands?
I'm assuming not as big as these guys. I mean, there's hands that are, put it this way, DeAndre Hopkins wears like a 4X glove or something like that. Like, that's crazy to me how big your hands are. I wore an X or an L. So 4X has to be at least up to here. Right, that's a hand. Like, I can barely grip a football. Those dudes are catching in one hand. I mean, it takes some skill, but yet a glove helps.
Do I have bigger hands than Maurice?
No, not even close.
What do you mean no? You don't have to give me a scowl like that.
Not even close, Shaq.
MVP. I want to try some of those football playing gloves and see just how
we
easy
can.
It
we
is
can definitely. Can we talk though? Because he's beating around the bush of where we really.
Well,
need
no,
to go.
You made big news a week ago, Maurice. You were all over ESPN and FS1.
Well, we
and
were all over it
here, there, and everywhere.
We were all over it, but now, like, Le'Veon probably won't talk to me ever again until.
Is that true?
No, I'm just playing with you. Now.
I thought
he's fine.
But you more or less represented his point of view.
Yeah.
And I thought I actually think it was a sunny one. The first question, though, is his absence at all related to the Steelers being 0-1-1? Because on the list of concerns that we've seen so far with this scuffling bunch is the running back. I mean, James Conner's fumble did cost them the victory. Let's be clear about that in week one in Cleveland. But still, I don't think you would point at James Conner's performance as the reason.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's James Conner, but I think Le'Veon Bell is going to give you a little bit more and help you in some of those. Like against Kansas City, to start off 21 in the hole, I don't think you'll do that with Le'Veon Bell out there. But I don't think his – like this is where – and I'm going to say this because I want people to really understand like how crazy what happened in Pittsburgh really is. Like, I am more shocked – and was more appalled by players talking about his money than I was Vontae Davis quitting at halftime.
Is that true?
No question.
I mean, I've like seen we've
players,
talked about.
Well, no, real quick. I've seen players shut it down. Not necessarily quit, but say, look, like, this is it. You know, I'm going to try, but shut it down. This is like the first time I've ever seen someone talk about someone else's money, like, out in the open. And so that there started something. Right. That started something. And if you win week one, I think you're fine. It's out of the way. But now that you tied and then you lost, and now all of a sudden people are starting to come in and try to attack the Steelers, they have to figure out a way to rally around each other and get back out there. Like Antonio Brown, the media is kind of coming after him right now. And I haven't seen anyone really step in to back him up as a player. Like, I don't follow the Pittsburgh Steelers like that, but no one's come out and said, like Antonio's my brother. It is, you know, we're going to go with him.
Well, Antonio Brown actually did, but now Antonio Brown, you know.
Well, he did that at first, yeah, with Le'Veon, but now he's getting attacked, so no one's come out and said anything to his defense. And so I think, you know, and Mike Tomlin, this is one thing I love about Mike Tomlin is that, you know, he can relate to all the players in that locker room. He can relate to them, and he'll find a way to bring those guys in. But right now it's, you know, you're 0-1-1.
It's funny to me because this is the melodrama that is the Pittsburgh Steelers for the last couple of years now. And Mike Tomlin and, you know, remember Antonio Brown in the locker room doing
the FaceTime thing
that he did. Yeah. And I mean, this isn't a new thing. And also there's a lack of discipline. The excuse you keep hearing and Coach Tomlin's area of expertise is defense. And, you know, in the early part, or I would say probably for the first 7 years or so of him being the head coach, he was deferential to Dick LeBeau. But this is now his defense. And I don't just mean from a distance. I mean, literally, that he more and more wants to use the Tampa 2 or some right. variation on it. He's the one installing it. And what's further, he has Kevin Colbert's ear. He's working to bring in the guys he wants in there. Yes. And yet, all we hear about is, bad communication out on the field.
I'll say this.
Sometimes.
In the league, where you spend your money is where you're going to get the best production, right? So in Jacksonville, if you look at their defense, there's hundreds of millions of dollars all through that defense.
Yeah, true.
And that's why they play well. If you look at Pittsburgh, where's all the money?
Right. Well, that's what I said to you a week ago.
It's on offense, right?
And it can't all be tied up in three guys or the vast majority.
Yes, it can. If you win, if that's where your money's allocated, then defensively, you just have to try to hold people out of the end zone. Like, all right, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do our best. We're just going to try to hold, but you guys got to score points. And so it's the same way. If you look at the Rams, they kind of spread their money out throughout, but there's certain places like that defensive line is making a lot of money. Those three interior guys are making a lot of money. Then they have rookies on the outside or first deal guys on the outside. Corners are locked down. You got a franchise player, first deal guy. Linebackers, first deal guys, except for Barron. I mean, so they've allocated their money differently on that side. Then offensively, they've allocated it really to both receivers, a running back, and a tackle. That's it. Everyone else is still on their first-year deal. So, you know, you just have to figure out ways to do it. If you're going to have these star players, like in Pittsburgh where you have stars, superstars, they're going to have to score points and win games consistently.
Well, first of all,
you can't blame the defense.
The thing that jumps to mind, and I'm not cavalier in saying this, but how important was Ryan Shazier? I knew he was important, but my goodness. The entire thing, the defense was fine, but since he went out, it has been a train wreck.
Well, they have to find that linebacker that can run the middle of the field.
Right.
You have to find a guy that can run.
Well, that's the disconnect. Talk about miscommunication. Forget what happens in 60 minutes on Sundays. What about Colbert and Tomlin? They didn't seem to address.
Well, they did.
Was Morgan Burnett was the plan? And maybe it still will be this over the hall
But you have to remember you're trying to. The big thing last year was a secondary. So they went out and addressed the secondary. Now they have to address the linebackers. You only can address so much at a time, right?
That hybrid Morgan Burnett, Terrell Edmonds thus far has not yielded much.
Hopefully.
Travis Kelce running all by himself down the middle of the field.
Yeah, hopefully it works out, but you have to give them time to do it. And then they change defensive schemes too. So that takes a lot as well. But at the end of the day, Pittsburgh, people are going to keep it's like sharks in the water. When they smell blood, people are going to come and attack. And they feel it right now in Pittsburgh. There was, you know, last year going 13-3. This year starting off with a tie and a loss. They have to find a way to get it going and get back in the race. It's still their division to win. Now, but let me say this, though. It is their division to win, but Cincinnati's not playing with a lot of people. And the Browns.
I told
people about the Browns. And they at 0-2 or 0-1-1.
Right.
Are better than most teams that are 2-0.
Okay,
some of these 2-0 teams.
That's fine, but they're not playoff relevant.
I don't know.
The Bengals are.
What if the Browns get on a heater? because they got the Jets this week. Mm-hmm. Then they have another, I forget who their other team is, but they're, it's starting that, you know, if they come out and end up winning two or three games in these next four games, it's going to be a problem, because then they're going to believe, because their defense is flying around like no other.
I kind of agree. I will never let go of the fact, I don't care if Denzel Ward got a couple of picks in week one or not, if they had Bradley Chubb with Myles Garrett, it would just be
you could have had both of them.
It would be a bear style thing. What the Bears look like right now is crazy. All of a sudden, you know, it ebbs and flows, and the Jags showed the way last year, and the Rams really tuned up their defense.
The Denver Broncos
even
really
better. The Broncos are back. That Bears front seven, it looks devastating. It seems like defense, at least in the early part of the season, in spite of Patrick Mahomes and in spite of the huge point totals that we're seeing in certain places, I feel like defense, you always hear it wins championships. That's only true some of the time. I think this is one of those years where that seems like the dominant defenses are starting to rise back up.
Well, yeah, again, they have to adjust to the rules of the game. You know, and so because of the way the league is kind of veering towards passing and all this, you're starting to get these hybrid linebackers Telvin Smith, who can run with receivers, or Miles Jack, who can run with receivers and also stay in the box. And you see that with the Rams. They've kind of built their team off of that style. When we go going back to Pittsburgh, they're trying to build a defense that will catch. And when I mean catch, like, we're not going to come attack you aggressively. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do all these crazy blitzes. We're just going to sit there and wait for you to make a mistake, and then we're going to capitalize off it. No one just made a mistake yet.
I know.
That's just the bad part about
aren't
it.
Good so yeah. far. Maybe that's a bad bet, as the focus on quarterbacks in the NFL is so great now that quarterbacks, the average quarterback, is better. It's sort of like movies. I say that about movies all the time. Even if you don't like a movie that you see in 2018, the production value is so great that it's going to look better than a movie you thought was pretty good in 1989. It just is better. Things have progressed.
It just looks better.
I think quarterbacks are now better. The average QB is better than the average QB was 15, 20 years ago. I mean, how many teams have just an abjectly awful QB who's costing them games? Maybe 6-8 teams now?
I don't know. Every quarterback has its flaws, or has their flaws. And you have to, as a defense, like, so I'll give you a great example. I was talking with someone, one of the coaches at the Rams after the game, and I was like, you know, there's only two ways to play defense, at least I learned. There's a defense that carries the seams, and there's a defense that runs to the flats. Now, I'll say there's probably four quarterbacks that can throw consistently outside the numbers. So when you're throwing outside the numbers, I'm talking about like out routes, comebacks, and they can get that ball there to them consistently. With that being said, why would I then not play a defense that covers the inside routes, the seam defense, right? Because I'm going to give you those throws because those are some of the hardest throws, but you have a lot of defenses or defensive coordinators who come in and they're like, we're going to protect the flats. We're going to make them throw it up here. Like, to me, that's no. Like, I'm going to force you to throw the hard throw
in the 21st century
because these quarterbacks, they all don't have the arm strength to make it happen. So it may seem, I think it's because the style of defense is why these quarterbacks look like they're getting better, right? If that makes sense, right? So it's not because they're actually better. It's just people are trying to attack them differently.
Well, definitely completion percentages, and it goes all the way back to the Bill Walsh days. The completion percentages are obviously much higher. They're 10% or greater than what they were 20 years ago. And Tom Brady, the alleged greatest of all time, and he's in the top two at worst. Top three at worst, let's say, because Montana's still. But anyway.
Whoa. Well, Tom Brady is the greatest of all time.
Aaron Rodgers, you know, is now. Everybody agrees with Damashek. 8 years after Damashek asserted.
He's the most talented.
He's also dominant. I mean, there's all.
He's talented, but he don't have enough ships to be dominant.
Jay Cutler was talented as well.
Yeah, but you're right.
Aaron Rodgers is actually coming through. It's not like he's okay, just resting on talent.
So five Super Bowls to one, and I love Aaron Rodgers.
Okay,
so that's why he's the GOAT, because he has the Thanos rings. He only needs one more, like Thanos. He's looking for that. Which one was it that he was trying to find? The guy had in his
hand. Right. But by the way, about that Thanos, another movie-ish analogy for you is. The Steelers are running the risk of getting Thanos'd. Antonio Brown, trade me? I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not worried.
I just think he was, you know, first of all, let's remember this. To be a great player in this league,
that's right.
Your personality has to match that. especially what he does for the Pittsburgh Steelers, his personality is more aggressive. He's out there. So when he does feel bad and people bait him, he's going to bark back, which is fine.
I completely agree with that. Willie and I did a lot about the mental makeup of guys like you and him and anyone who's going to thrive at the highest level in professional sports, which very few human beings have the physical ability to even get close to. Of course, you have a huge ego if that's the case. But let's say the Steelers go now. I think this Tampa game is big for them on Monday night because they go Tampa. Then they go, then they host Baltimore, then the Falcons, then they go to Cincy, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be 0-5-1. They could be 1-4-1. If they get to that, you really understand, you know, every player doesn't have the grasp you do and you're in touch with Levy. And is there any concern or thought that if it gets to that point, that the Steelers will then say, well, I mean, for this mess, we really don't need Levy at this point. He doesn't get his money, deal him? Are they able to deal him?
What money does he not get? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, he can't. They're not.
Because he could sign tomorrow and start making, you know, $1 million a week.
Yeah, he could. Or he can, you know, again, he's still weighing the option. He's weighing the option of, is it worth? Okay, and granted, to a lot of people, like, if you use money, those type of numbers, to the average person, they're like, oh, my God, I would be in there right now. I will, you know, and you're right. You may do it. But
you
so
would,
let me,
and then
so
you
let
would
me
get
break
broken.
It, yeah, so let me break it down to the average person here who are listeners who where we're talking just regular money, right? So let's say if you're working a job and you're getting paid $12 an hour, you're doing $25 an hour worth of work, though. And then you see Bob over here, who hasn't done as much work as you have, but all of a sudden he's making $30 an hour. So you're getting your 12 doing all the work, and Bob's getting 30 doing maybe a little bit more than most. And so in this situation, what all he's saying is, I'm trying to, I need to maximize my ability to make
more
money.
I hear that, but MVP. Is that a simile, a metaphor, or a analogy, Maurice? It's an analogy.
It's an analogy,
Maurice,
yeah.
Made. That's fine, but it doesn't hold water for me because even in that situation, what do you think? The average person can just go and be like, hey, I'm doing more work than the guy in the cubicle next to me. You should pay me
you
double.
Should. You
and
should.
The boss, and the boss will be
you
like,
should.
Hey, sit back down. You like your job.
That's fine. That's fine, but you should go up there and state your claim. You should
right.
go up there
okay.
and show, hey, listen, this is what I'm doing. I need to get compensated a little bit more for this. If you, and granted, a lot of people, that's uncomfortable for people to go up to their boss and say, hey, you're not paying me enough. Le'Veon's doing that. And that's not, I've done it. Rod
like
Woods has done it.
I like the idea of average people holding out.
Yeah, well, I've seen it before.
I'm leaving at lunch.
Listen,
I'm like Vontae Davis. I'm going home
listen,
at lunch. Listen,
I've
get a
seen
bump.
It before. I have friends who have been in places where people are just like, hey, I'm out of here. Just walk out. Happens in everyday life.
Does the boss chase them out to the parking lot? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Come on. Let's take a chill pill.
For the most,
figure this thing
normally
out.
They just send it up the ranking. They send emails up to the top, and then the top has to try to figure it out. But, you know, he went to the top. And so this is my thing.
MVP does a lot of hard work here. I want you to try that.
You should.
I want you to send Roger a note.
Great. Not Roger.
Dear Roger.
You got who's the top here? Quinzel?
I don't think you can get any higher up than Roger.
Yeah, but Roger really don't deal with us. Like, he's more on the other side. He's not on the – this is the network side. So it's really – this is how I see the NFL, too, since we're going there.
I think
it's Roger. Then I think there's three people, right? I don't know the exact names, but I know there's a network, the head of network, the head of marketing and advertisement. And then I think it's like
– you.
No, because if I was up there, we'd be doing stuff completely different. Then it'd be like Troy Benton, the football side, like those three. So, they still report to Roger, but they kind of head different sectors and it breaks off. But going back to the Le'Veon Bell situation, he's not getting fined right now, any of that. All he is losing, you know, the potential of earning $800,000 a week. But is that $800,000 a week worth more than getting a deal in the free market that may be, you know, more or closer towards David Johnson's deal?
I don't know because
David Johnson's making $30 million in 3 years.
Right, but isn't David Johnson? I mean, Le'Veon,
isn't he what? Isn't
rather,
he what?
You know, he tweeted out the monocle after week one. you talked to him and reported that he was watching the Steelers and rooting for them and for James Conner. That's great. What he really should be rooting for out of self-interest is for David Johnson to get it going here. Because if
That ain't David Johnson's fault.
I'm just saying, but you can see the simple logic. Why are we going to pay anybody that kind of money when we can get by with somebody we're going to draft in round four?
I'll tell you this. That's a great analogy. So why give Sam Bradford $20 million for what he's doing? So if I pay Big Ben a bunch of money and he goes and stinks it up.
I think Le'Veon Bell is a rare talent.
How many quarterbacks, and this is where we get the issue. How many quarterbacks are worth that money that they're making?
Not many.
The pieces that are worth the money are the ones that they're throwing the ball to or handing the ball to because it helps them out. I remember a long time ago, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers. I want to say it was like 2011 or 12. He came out verbally, and he never talks, and was like, we need a running game. If we can't run the ball, we can't win. And that's your greatest quarterback of all time saying that. You need players around. Aaron Rodgers is able to win some games. He did a great job playing the Vikings and all those things. But you need players around him. That's why they went and got Jimmy Graham. That's why they drafted three running backs. I mean, they're trying to build talent around this dude, understanding that he can't do it on his own.
I agree, but I think that actually has to do with the second and third contract. When you start getting into the level that Rodgers and Brady and Roethlisberger and guys like that are filling, I mean, Rodgers actually makes the guys around him better.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that over and over again. Greg Jennings, we'll see what Jordy Nelson ultimately does with Derek Carr. Donald Driver moves on.
Greg Jennings, you had a bunch of guys.
As those guys move on, they tend to fizzle out, as do guys who leave Tom Brady. And there are only so many guys that make the guys around him better. Regarding Roethlisberger, though, it is interesting because what started this whole mess was Ryan Scarpino, formerly of Steelers PR, saying that AB is lucky to have played with Roethlisberger. Now, this is something that our colleagues, James Jones and Reggie Wayne, said about a month ago, diminishing AB's greatness as they try to rank him against Jerry Rice, who got to play with Joe Montana and Steve Young. I mean, is Le'Veon Bell making Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown better? Is Antonio Brown making Roethlisberger better than he is?
Like what you could look
we
at
can come
now
back
is,
to the Steelers, and not because I'm a Steelers fan, but because legitimately it's the most compelling early season story.
I'll hit you with two different answers. One, when you draft well and you draft great players, guess what? You got to pay them. That's just what it comes down to. So stop drafting well if you don't want to pay guys. Or let guys walk out of the door. One of the two. There's only two ways.
Well, why the Steelers didn't draft a running back in the 2018 draft, knowing that this was looming on their horizon?
You gotta talk to them about that. I think they felt like they had some other issues. They thought Le'Veon would still come in if they didn't get a deal.
I know that's exactly what they thought, and that's why the teammates complained.
That's why you can't defend him.
That's why they talked about his money. I mean, that's clearly
you never
why.
Talk about a man's money. It doesn't matter how upset you are. You being an adult. You get out of your feelings and you don't do that.
I would be mad. You know what? You also advocated that if you're in a cubicle and you're doing more work than the guy next to you and all that, imagine being in the offensive line and going through the stinking hot August and
Ramon Foster got their second deal.
And then, all right.
But Le'Veon can't.
But just imagine, though, you do that with the assumption that, all right, 26 is going to do what he did last year, and then we're going to get on our roll, and we're going to pick up where we left off, hopefully washing off the stink of the Jaguars. Saying, wait, he's not Cole Month? That's what we thought was happening.
I wish they had that much energy to do all that in April, May, June, and July when he was trying to negotiate a deal and they weren't talking.
They thought he was going to show up.
Yeah, but they didn't think that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to get him a good deal. They just thought he was going to be like, oh, this is you got to take what they give you.
Well, they did give him a good deal until the Todd Gurley deal was announced
a week later. That means it wasn't a good deal. It wasn't a good deal.
It was a good deal at the time. It wasn't a good deal as soon as Todd Gurley signed his massive
deal. So that means it wasn't a good deal. But neither here nor there, Pittsburgh has the ability and the talent to make a turnaround. They just have to figure out a way to circle the wagons.
Give me a pick. Tampa, St. Pete, the greatest quarterback in Tampa. Football America, right? Really? You think he's going to?
Well, it's in Tampa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll turn around after this, but I think Tampa Monday night is going to be hot. It's going to be.
They're going to be 0-2-1. Then they're going to take the Ravens down and the Falcons down and the Bungles in Cincy down.
I think they'll take both the Ravens and Falcons. I don't know about the Bengals.
If you had to say one, you had to put your right leg as a bet on this. Mm-hmm. And don't give me jive about like both. You have to gamble your right leg on this. The Rams are in the Super Bowl or the Jags are in the Super Bowl? Who are you more confident about?
Ooh, more confident? It's the Jags. They have an easier road. The Rams still have the Vikings, the Saints, you know, Eagles now with Wentz back. It's just a tougher road. That's all.
All right. Good stuff as always from Maurice Jones-Drew. All right, we'll let him go there. I have so many more things to do about the game of life, but Maurice is very busy. Watch him
later.
With Deion Sanders, prime time. You ever heard of him? And he's doing. Oh, he's getting calls even for it. That's how fancy he is. The great Maurice Jones-Drew, everybody. Now let's turn it over to another great. His name's Willie McGinnis. He wore the number 55 for the Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots. He's named him a All right, here it is now. Time for the Week 2 exit interview. And seated across from me, Browns legend, Patriots legend, USC legend, Willie McGinnis. What's happening, 55?
I'm chilling, man.
Are you?
Week 2 of football. I'm kind of excited. A lot of surprises. But most importantly, I'm here chopping it up with my guy.
Well, I love our opportunities to kibitz, and I don't want to put any pressure on you, but last week, Maurice Jones-Drew sat in here for the exit interview of week one and made a lot of national news talking about Le'Veon Bell. Now here we sit, the New England Patriots.
They have the same agent, right?
Is that true? Is that the end?
I think so.
That makes sense.
I think there's an end there.
Let's start with this. What number do you think Josh Gordon should wear with the Patriots? 12's off the books.
12 is definitely off the books, so it'll probably be an 80s number.
Or up to the 80s.
Or maybe like, I don't know, like an 18 or something. Is that off
can't
the books?
Well, he can't take 13 because I think that's Philip Dorsett.
Nah, that's already gone.
15 is
11.
Hogan. No, Julian Edelman.
Edelman. Damn. Sorry, Jules.
10 might be free because Garoppolo
took it. I don't know. He may go higher. He may go to a true receiver number.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see.
We'll wait and see. If the deal gets done.
We'll wait and see about that. Right. React to what you saw on Sunday in Duval County. What was your takeaway?
That game made me nervous because I know how dangerous that team is at home, especially if they're playing from ahead. So going into it, I think everybody with the Patriots, you know, coaches, everybody knows you can't dig yourself a hole with that type of defense. It'll be tough to climb out of. They play a certain way. They get aggressive. They are aggressive. The matchups, you know, they worry you. And if you can play a certain way and keep the game even till you get to the third, fourth quarter, and then things start to happen, that's the way you play them. If you let them jump out on you with that defense, it's tough, you know, to fight your way back in the game. And I saw that. I saw them get into a situation offensively where they couldn't overcome, you know, what was going on.
Don't say in response to this, we'll have to wait and see. I'm just going to say something, and then you just say yes or no. Are you excited to see the Rams-Jaguars in Super Bowl 53?
If that is a Super Bowl, I would be excited to see that. If that's a Super Bowl, yeah, I would be. That would be a great Super Bowl.
Do you think that's likely?
No, it's too early. It's week two.
I knew you would say it's too early.
You already know that.
I want to hear from you.
But you already know that. I'm going to tell you how I feel. It's week two. Like the teams that are 1-1 or 0-1-1, like your Steelers, do you get excited and say, oh, the season's over? No, veteran teams learn how to weather the storms.
Well, the Steelers are
better.
A veteran team, and they don't seem to be cavalier.
It's okay. I won a Super Bowl. Crazy. Hey, I went to a Super Bowl at 0-2, so you can't tell me like it can't happen. Started off the season 0-2 and went to a Super Bowl.
But the Patriots reacted differently. Am I right about
that?
Well,
all teams will react. The good teams come together. They make adjustments. They figure out what's wrong. Nobody panics because it's early. And mid-season, you start to see those teams gain momentum and get better. And the teams that jumped out early, like we saw a lot of teams last year, start to just wither and get worse. And, I mean, that's the sign of good coaching, great coaching, and veteran teams. I'm not saying there's a switch you can hit on the wall
Agreed.
And you're just going to start playing great. But I will say is they understand how to overcome certain things within the first quarter of the season, which we're not even there yet.
We've talked a lot about this, that for – I mean, it's not fair to really put anybody on the Patriots level in the 21st century, but the Broncos and then the Steelers would probably be the two biggest rivals for the Patriots coming out of the AFC this millennium.
Baltimore, too. I would say Baltimore has been a big
rival. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's fair. Yeah, absolutely. But do you sense from where you sit and you are you understand what goes on inside the building with Belichick? And you and I have discussed philosophical differences between the way the Patriots like to approach things one by one and how the Steelers under Tomlin liked it. From what you can tell, and I maybe it's a little unfair because you're not in that building.
Right.
Do you sense that the dysfunction off the field is impacting what's happening on the field? Who's to blame that the Steelers continue 2 years removed, 20 months or thereabouts, since your Patriots whipped up on the Steelers in the AFC title game. And in the post game, in the locker room, all the Steelers defenders were saying, a lot of those touchdowns, Chris Hogan running open, miscommunication. You know, a lot of miscommunication in there. We're still talking about miscommunication after the Chiefs game. I mean, whose fault is that? Well, is that talent? Is that coaching? Who?
Well, one, the Chiefs are really good. So they throw a lot at you. A lot of formations, personnel groups, all that, and they do it time and time again. So you got to be prepared for that. And if you're not, big plays happen. Things like that happen, what we saw. To answer your question directly, it starts with the coaches. The coaches, they got to define the game plan in the system. And if it's too much going in, then they got to take things out of the game plan. They have to make sure that everybody's on the same page so you don't have those communication breakdowns or those mental errors, because those turn into big plays and touchdowns in the games. Mm. They really do. So I think in order to get guys to play fast and react and not think, I'm not saying dumb it down, but put guys in position where they can play fast. And if you got too much that week, then you got to take things out. Teams that give you a lot of personnel groups and formations and shifts and motions, all those different things that the Chiefs do to see what you're in, you go more vanilla. And you make them beat you one-on-one, our guys against your guys. When you try to get fancy and dial up all these different, you know, schemes and things against them, then there are going to be breakdowns. Communication sometimes doesn't happen across the board. You have to be great communicators, like you said. That's one thing we took pride in. That's one thing I know the old Pittsburgh Steelers defense took pride in. Those guys were all on the same page defensively. That's why they were so good for so long. So it starts with the coaching, and then it starts with the players buying in. You got to put more time in. If you know you're playing against a team like that, you got to do everything in your power that week to come in before practice, after practice, get your groups together, and rep it, because it'll pay off in the game. If you're not doing that, then it's not going to happen on Sunday.
Interesting, and it just endlessly makes my head spin, because I don't think it's a talent issue at this point.
No.
But
they got some good players.
Yeah, defensively, yeah, certainly. Let's move on to this. Oh, by the way, one more thing about the Patriots and Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon with the Patriots, is that a team that can take down the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Well, they already beat the Jaguars without Josh Gordon. So if you get Julian Edelman back, I would say – they'll go, you know, that's a good matchup. And they've already beat him. So I would say yes. With Josh Gordon, I think with a healthy Josh Gordon that's buying into a system that's 100% dedicated to going in and giving his all, makes any team in the NFL better, because he's a rare talent. But you got to make sure he's on the same page. He's putting in the work. You have to put resources around him. You have to engulf him with football. So that's all he's doing. And when you put him in the right environment, maybe this is a good change. Maybe it's a fresh change. Maybe he needs to be around new faces. You go into a place where everybody from the groundskeepers to the best guy on the team is held accountable. And everybody's treated the same. So you're going into, I would say, an environment where you're gonna have pressure on you to do the right thing, but it's going to be fair across the board. And you're going to have those resources from ownership, who cares about players outside of the uniform, who tries to help them and make sure they're set up for success. And if they're dealing with issues, off the field issues, we'll give you those resources or put their arms around it and try to help you if you want that help. So I would say when I heard that he was being released, the Patriots was one of the teams I was like, we had some players that were a little outspoken in the past that's had some character so-called issues come to that team and play great, not have an issue or clip off the field.
It is interesting because people often say, I'm surprised Belichick would look at a Josh Gordon type. That doesn't seem to be what he anticipates from his players. They brought in Michael Floyd. They brought in Kenny Britt. It's not like they're adverse.
It goes all the way down the line. We had Corey Dillon, who people thought was an issue. He was a great teammate.
Right.
And he played great in our system.
Randy Moss even. Right.
Randy Moss never had an issue. You know, so you can go down the line. Now, you're not always perfect. You're not going to get everybody right. They tried that with Haynesworth. That didn't work.
Right.
How'd that experiment go? It didn't work. So you're not batting 1,000, but you're close. You know, you're close.
That's the interesting lesson. It's not that what their background is. It's what you guys, what the Patriots seem to have done more often than not with those questionable guys and turning them into productive guys.
Right.
What about what's happening? The team that, either way, it's a reverse McGinnis. Gordon goes from the Browns to the Patriots. Interesting.
He'll probably have a better record than I did when
don't
I went
talk
to the
that
Browns.
Way. I don't like your modesty.
I was 10-6. My best year with the Browns was 10-6. So him going from the Browns to the Patriots, he definitely will have a better record and probably hit the playoffs. I didn't hit my playoffs in 3 years with the Browns. But we gave him a 10-6, which we thought was good enough, but the AFC was too
you
good.
And Derek Anderson, right?
We were balling.
Yeah, that's right.
It's my guy.
What do you think about just a couple things real quick? What do you think about the Saquandary that is mounting in the tri-state area there? I think you saw Eli look lousy on Sunday night. A lot of people, that's not the first time people have said, maybe Eli's a little past his prime now. Do you think that they erred in not taking a quarterback at number two? As good as Saquon looks.
I think they're trying to win now. And when you get a young guy in, everybody's not going to come in and play at a certain level that what you expect. Certain guys take a little bit more time. And you see some of the young guys now that are starting struggle a little bit. Everybody's not, you know, playing great ball or, hey, we're saying in week two he's going to take his team to the championship. What I will say is you got to give Eli a chance. He's proven and shown and deserve another opportunity with the right pieces. Didn't have an offensive line. They're still struggling. They spent money. They move guys around. They're still struggling. You put pieces around them on the outside. You go and draft Barkley, a guy that can take some of the pressure off of Eli. We already seen that. You got OBJ. You extend him, one of the best players in the league. You got a tight end, Evan Ingram, another playmaker, short to intermediate passing game. You got Shepard. You got guys that can help them now. They got to do a better job at executing. Right? Some of the things that happened against the Cowboys was elementary plays that happened, games and stunts up front, corner and safety blitzes that you should be able to pick up. The ball's not going down the field, and this offense isn't exciting because Eli doesn't really have that time. So what is he doing? He's getting it off to Barkley. They're running Barkley. That's his option. Instead of getting hit and getting sacked, which I don't know how many times he got sacked, 4 to 5 times the other night, dump it to Barkley. So they've got to figure out how to help this offensive line, which is run the ball and get the ball out of Eli's hands fast.
It is crazy. The Dallas Cowboys are not the 2000 Ravens. They're not the 2017 Jacksonville
But they're
Jaguars.
All solid. They're a solid group.
I you know what? I said that all offseason.
Right.
I love Tank Lawrence. I think he is a high-end pass rusher. Sean Lee and now Van Der Esch and the nice story going on with Jalen
Smith.
Defensive
backs are all young.
I like,
you got Chris Richard back there coaching them up, and now they're in their second year understanding, and Byron Jones is a guy who's elevated his game. Like, you got to give guys a chance to develop.
I said over and over. Yeah. I said, you watch. That's going to be a top-10 defense this year. Did I not
top
say
10?
That, Eddie
Spaghetti? Whoa, are you jumping out top-10?
Yeah.
Okay.
I said the Cowboys defense was going to be strong. That's
they
not
look good.
Be, what if you throw Earl Thomas back there? We'll worry about that at a later date.
Yeah.
It really is interesting, and it does kind of boil down to that, and it seems like the Giants might be tracking in that direction. The Steelers might be too, is that when you are top heavy, when you are built around your stars, as both those teams more or less are,
right.
It can get sideways. It's like a Jaguar car, not the team. like the Jaguar. Oh, when it's finely tuned, when it's perfect, oh, it's maybe one of the best cars out there.
Do you have a Jaguar?
Me?
Well, how do you know? I'm just saying.
I'm passing along something I've heard rich friends.
You've got some information.
Why, do you have one?
No, I don't.
No, you don't.
But they're a high car now. I see a couple of driving the driveway up here. So,
if I ever see you in a Jaguar, I'm taking a picture and I'm sending it all over New England. Look at what McGinnis did. Wasn't bad enough. He went to the Browns.
You're saying Jaguars are a bad car?
I'm saying you shouldn't be wearing a team that's drive a car that's related with the team.
What if it's free?
I'll allow it.
Okay.
You know what?
All right. Thanks.
But you know what? I want you to drive your Jaguar to Canton because when you get that gold jacket that is already overdue in my
book. It's tough, man. You know how that goes.
I know, but I want to see it already. Why are wide receivers divas? Why is that the position?
Because I think they can change or impact a play on one single catch, or they can't.
Well, so can running backs.
I know, but they always say, I'm on the island, I'm by myself. When that ball's in the air, it's me and the quarterback against a defensive back, unless you're getting double coverage. So they feel like because they have so much control when the ball's in the air with the balls in their hand, they can determine a game. And they figure that when you score touchdowns, which a lot of – when you talk divas, mostly are offensive players – when you score touchdowns, you fit in that category.
I guess you do get to stand in the end zone and have like 70,000 people cheering for you. I guess that would imbue
defensive
you with
players. We got to get a strip sack or interception, a pick six. These guys are always touching the ball, so they feel like they're special, which they are. They're a little different, you know. They're a little different. You gotta handle them with care, you know, because they can take over a game. You know, we saw Julio do that before. You know, we saw A.J. Green just a week ago, 3 touchdowns in the first half, just take over a football game and get a league where he was getting double covered. They couldn't tackle him. He was running by people. So certain guys, I would say, that has earned it and has been consistent have the right to be divas.
Well, Antonio Brown certainly fits the latter part of your statement.
He can be a diva.
So my position is, as far as this goes, I am not concerned about 84 speaking out and demanding the ball.
I'm not worried.
Jerry Rice, after they beat the Bengals in the Super Bowl, in the locker room, after the game.
I didn't get enough touches.
Was carrying on. why am I not getting praised enough here? Why are people falling all over Joe Montana? I'm the one who made those plays, right?
I didn't get enough touches. And you know what? You want them to have that mentality. Most guys are always open. Probably not. But those guys you mentioned, the majority of the time, they do get open, and they work their butts off. So those guys you named were some of the best in the game that's played
and
in
that's,
our game.
And that's where
so
Antonio
they
Brown
have
ranks,
earned
right.
They have earned that right to be a little, you know, a little devious at times.
Devious.
I give them that.
I like that. I have no issue with them speaking out. But I do think, and it really does boil down to this. I talk all the time with you and other guys that spend time in the league. You cannot hold NFL football players to the same standard that you do people who have normal jobs, whether you like that or not. You know how you like to go and watch them play, or you know how you spend every Sunday watching them play on TV? Right. It's because they are rare commodities. And as a result, they have egos. There are very few guys who play professional sports that don't have huge egos.
Not just football, any sport.
I'm sorry, well, of course.
Any professional
because
sport.
You understand that you're rare.
You
that
know
if
how many
everybody
millions,
could do it, then you wouldn't
right.
have you
There's
wouldn't make
millions
money.
Millions of people that would love to be doing what you can do, but they can't. Even
right.
even great athletes that's gotten close that couldn't. And it takes a lot. So yeah, your mindset is a little bit different. Not saying you can't be humble and a good guy. But, yeah, your mindset is a little bit different because, you know, like you said, a rare commodity. When you look around the country, how many guys can do what you do on a consistent basis the way you do it for as long as you've been doing it and make it look easy?
I completely agree with this. And but the point, and it's not all sugar and sweetness out of Damashek. No. The point is that you always hear, hey, Tom Brady or Joe Montana or Michael Jordan or anybody else, hey, it doesn't matter. You play them in ping pong, they want to kill you. And I've seen Tom Brady like yeah. that. I've seen him,
he's
like in
it.
Video games.
He's done
he's
it.
He's super competitive.
He does it all the time.
But you can tell he's also a nice man, and you can tell he loves his children, right. and is a good. But when it's time to compete, those guys.
Switch. There's a switch.
But they're jerks. I mean, they turn into jerks.
There's no crying in baseball, right?
But right, but that's saying. What I.
That's
you wouldn't
how it
like
goes.
That guy if you're playing what backyard Jayla, wiffle Jayla, ball. You don't like that guy, but if you're playing, of course, that's what you want. You want a killer like
what
that.
What did Jalen Ramsey say last week in his interview after the game? If that's my grandmother out there,
right?
I'm going to get it. But if that's my mom or anybody, I'm going to get him. And they was like, "Well, your grandma might hit you back." He's like, "She's not getting up after one of my hits." So what I'm saying is like,
yeah, right.
The grease board is wiped clean when you step on the football field. There's no friends. Everybody's a competitor, and we're going at it. And that's
even,
the mentality you should have.
Right. And Antonio Brown demanding the ball, I surmise, is not ultimately bad for the Steelers.
Nah,
he's their best.
No, nah, because when he gets the ball, what does he do?
Yeah, scores six, and then he dances in the end zone.
He makes plays. He's earned that right to do that, though. That's the thing I think people get construed. You see a guy, and you're like, oh, he's won the ball. He's upset. He's saying that, one, I've worked my tail off, and I know what happens when I get the ball. Now, if you give me the ball and I don't perform, okay, I don't have nothing to say. But time and time again, I've proven and showed you over the years, I am one of the best, pound for pound, not receivers, players in the league. And when I get the rock, good things happen.
I agree with all of this.
So when he talks and he vents, let him. It's okay.
Yeah, but except here's the caveat. Here's the asterisk I must put next to all that.
Don't do it in the media.
No. Oh. But yeah, well, right. Yeah, that's one thing. And two, you never hear the Patriots doing that. Anybody on the Patriots?
I know.
Does anybody ever do that?
They do it. But they keep.
But
it
at
in-house.
Least they know don't do it. Microphone.
Yeah, and it's I think every coach. Has his own personality. He has to deal with multiple personalities and egos and all those things in locker rooms. And is that a winning way? Yeah. Steelers have won Super Bowls with outspoken guys from Porter. I can go all the way back from guys that were a little outspoken that didn't hold their tongues. But at some point, you got to let guys kind of vent and be themselves. And you've seen Gronk kind of be himself outside of football. And it's okay. Because that's him. When he gets on the field, is it a distraction?
No, but because it's never Gronk. I've never heard say.
I get it.
You know, we probably would have beaten the Jags on Sunday if Tommy Boy would have thrown me.
I know, because you know what? It's the thing that they keep amongst each other. Whatever talks they have in the locker room, or we used to have, or even other teams for that matter. You know, Seattle used to be really good at that. These guys used to get into it all the time. Where Sherman was there and all those different personalities. You saw it kind of leak out with Earl Thomas and Wagner at one point, you know? So what you got to understand is that exists in all locker rooms. Some teams just do a better job of keeping it in-house versus others. And the best way is to keep it in-house. So we don't talk about it or we don't try to ask you about it and it becomes a distraction and we're not talking about football. We're talking about you complaining or you not happy, and then the quarterback has to respond. And if the quarterback and you are tight, then you call him up like, bro, like, you know, why are we talking to the media? Or why are we talking about why I didn't get the ball, whatever? So you got to squash that, you know?
Well, why? So last question. Why can't Mike Tomlin make that happen with his veterans?
I think he can.
Who are the best
I think
players.
He does a good job, man. Like
you
dealing with the guys that he's been dealing with over the years. I think he does a great an incredible job. We are human. Sometimes you surprise the coaches with comments and things that happen. We've seen it for years. For the most part, I think that organization is well respected, you know, across sports in general. I think the coaching staff is one of the best. I think he juggles a lot with personalities and getting guys ready to play and diffusing situations regardless of where it's coming from, the quarterback or the receiver or the disgruntled running back that wants an extension or whatever the case may be, hold it all together and keep guys, or national anthem. I can keep going, things that happen. Or, you know, I think he's done a great job. His team is always competitive. They're always in the playoffs. And maybe some teams, that's what gets them going, when you have a little drama sometimes.
Okay. Feet to the fire then. Willie McGinnis, 55. Pittsburgh Steelers playing in January or no?
Yeah.
They're going to make the playoffs.
They better. They better.
Well, I'd like them to.
They better.
And
good teams figure it out. Like I said, it's week two. Good teams figure it out.
Will 26. Is 26's absence at all impacting the 0-1-1? Because from where I sit, it does not. It's weird how irrelevant it is.
I think he's one of those players that he can change a game and he can impact the game. But what we're seeing from James Conner is spectacular, because you know that's the heir apparent. So as a Stiller fan, you got to feel good about that. But you can't compare to say, oh, if Bell was here, we'd be doing this versus that, because he's not. So you gotta kind of pour into the kid that's there, that's giving you all he has. And I think he's had two great performances. Now, when Bell gets back, that's a different story. Now you got a two-headed monster. So now you're even better as a team. So that's a good thing to have, because now Connor's proven that he can go in and make plays. And you already know what Bell can do. So I think that's a good problem to have.
Okay, I said last
You like the
question.
Way I put that, right?
You did nicely. You did very nicely there, 55. The last thing, and then this really is it. Concern level about your Trojans.
Very concerned. Yeah. Very concerned. I know these guys want to win. I know they compete and they practice and they play hard, but we've got to do a better job. And it starts, you know, with everything with me, it starts at the top. You know, it starts at the top and it twinkles down. And we've lost some games and we've won a lot of games, but we have to start winning the games against the really good teams. We've got to start going in, beating the good teams. Our expectations are not just playing in the Rose Bowl or playing for a Pac-12 championship. Our expectations as a team is to be in the playoffs every year and to compete for national championships. That's what I expect when you talk about the Trojans and USC and what they do there. And they've got to get it together. They've got to pull it together. Not panicking. Not panicking at all. I still support my Trojans and I love them. But we've got to circle the wagons and we've got to pull it together and we've got to take that next step.
You are on public record on this very show voicing support for Clay Helton behind USC and everything else.
But he's the coach right now.
I'm going to say it again.
But he's the coach right now, so I have to support who's there. I'm not in control of whatever decisions they make as far as him being the coach or not. I'm supporting him because he's the coach. I'm supporting the players. I'm supporting the administration. I'm supporting, you know, my team, my family.
You see, that makes so much sense. It's right there in front of you, USC. He's been in your backyard the whole time. Willie McGinnis is the answer to this. Just ignore how Belichick disciples have done in the NFL and, for that matter, in college. And if you can do that outside of
State. See, I'm different because I never coached with Belichick. I just played for him. So
see?
That's the difference.
Viva la difference, USC. The great Willie McGinnis, everybody. Wow, juicy stuff there. Hardcore football talk with two of the greats from the 21st century, McGinnis and Maurice Jones-Drew. We'll kibitz with you later in the week. In the meantime, oh, by the way, make sure you listen to the broadcast. She's standing right in front of me. And I don't want to say if she's holding a weapon, threatening it. I'm not going to say she isn't. Also, you should listen to Dave's of Thunder and Good Sports on the Adam Carolla Show. Eddie Spaghetti, you want anything plugged in here? No? He's just a fan of life. You know, he's a follower. Be like Eddie Spaghetti. You know? All right. Now, we'll kibitz with you later in the week. Handsome Hank, Maurice Jones-Drew. Handsome Hank and Maurice Jones-Drew. Matt Money Smith, that's the guy. He's the voice of the Chargers. Maurice is the voice of the Rams. It gets very confusing around here. Anyway, we'll be breaking down Chargers and Rams coming up on Sunday. Some other big games for you. Until then, and make sure you watch at NFL.com/DDFP, the video show that we put out every Thursday. Do it for Spaghetti and for MOVP. They work so hard on it, you know? I think that deserves your attention. Sort of like Gene Hackman says, you know, to the people at Hickory High. It's like, this is your team. That kind of commitment deserves your respect and attention, or something like that. All right, we hope to get your attention once again on Thursday. Until then, it's been a thin slice of heaven.